Big show for you here today. People never count the playoff games enough when they're doing fantasy projections. They cut it off at week 17. I mean, these are the most important games of the season. This stuff matters. We tell you what actually matters from these games. Then we dive into your dynasty debates. So much good information in that segment from Boone, and I'm there as well. All right. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Justin Boone. Boone, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, dude. Feeling good. I don't know if you're going to put me through the weekly torture ritual of talking about the latest in the Bills organization, but some developments this week on that. And it's not my favorite, but it's not the worst. It's definitely not the worst. And we'll see what they do at defensive coordinator here. That can make it a little more exciting at least. So yeah, things are good, man. How you doing?
It's not the worst. The summary of the Buffalo Bills in 2026. I love it. Print a t-shirt. We'll get you that for Indy. You can wear a t-shirt that says it's not the worst with the Buffalo Bills logo. How does that sound? That sound good to you?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not setting off any confetti cannons or anything over here, but sticking with your offensive coordinator who has the offense, you know, going pretty well the last couple seasons. And if we can, you know, make an inspiring hire at defensive coordinator and we can get some better play on that side of the ball, that is, you know, tended to be the problem for the Bills the last couple of years, especially when it comes to the playoffs. So we'll see what they get done there. And then it just comes down to, will they actually address some of those holes in the roster this offseason? Will they be able to get that done? And, you know, come the summer, maybe I'll have talked myself back into them being a potential contender. But yeah, it's not quite as bad as maybe it looked a week ago. And that's why, you know, I'm not wearing the dark clothes. I guess, you know, brown's a bit of a dark color, but we're not dressed in full black with the, you know, no logo black hat like I had on last week. So yeah, the things are looking up.
Yeah, we're trending in the right direction, which is good. Hey, at least Josh Allen's happy, which clearly that's been the goal of the whole Buffalo Bills organization, is what can we do to make our quarterback happy? Which, you know what? As I said to you last time we talked about the Bills, they have been through the ringer in terms of the quarterback position. You know, friggin' Trent Edwards and J.P. Losman, you know, who I think is a coach somewhere, actually. Anyway, so it makes sense that they're doing everything they can to make the most important player. It doesn't make it perfectly sense, but you know what? It's good enough. It's fine. All right, that's the Bills talk for now. We've got a lot to talk about on this show here today. Not so much about the Buffalo Bills, but what we are going to be discussing is things that happened in the postseason that actually matter for the upcoming fantasy football season. Because you know what? People never do as good enough a job as they should for counting some of the performances in the playoffs. So we will talk about that. Then in the next two segments, we are going to discuss your dynasty debates. But before we dive into the show, we are excited to share here that the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, Football 301, Inside Coverage, and Yahoo Sports Daily, my God, look at that lineup of shows there, will be live daily from San Francisco next week at the Super Bowl. This show, the Fantasy Forecast, is going to be live Monday and Wednesday, 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific. That's right. I can only handle one time zone at a time. So it will be Pacific time when I'm over there. So 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific, that's when it'll be. You do the math at home for Eastern time. Of course, I'm going to make appearances on 301 and Yahoo Sports Daily as well. So if you really just can't get enough of me, number one, you should seek some help for that. But number two, that's where you can find me on those shows as well. And we're going to have a ton, and I mean a ton, of one-on-one interviews with top stars in the NFL from Radio Row. Be sure to check out all of our content on Yahoo Sports and Fantasy YouTube channels, the Yahoo Sports app, and of course, the Yahoo Sports Network. This is provided, by the way, that my flight actually takes off Sunday morning, because we dodged the weather here in Virginia Beach last time. Looks like we might be getting a little bit of it right when I'm supposed to take off. So fingers crossed out there that I am in San Francisco next week for all these great shows. Fingers crossed on that. But let's move on here. No one cares about my weather troubles. What people do care about is their fantasy takeaways. And Boone, that's what we're going to do here today. We're going to go through, I think we've got about 6 to 7 things that happened in the NFL postseason that actually will matter for the upcoming fantasy season. Because like I said, buddy, people never do a good enough job counting this. It's like the spreadsheet bros in fantasy, they just log out after week 17 and don't look at anything else beyond that. But some of this stuff in the NFL playoffs, you know, the most important games of the season, boom, this stuff actually matters.
Yeah, and when we're having the conversations in the summer, you're right that very often people don't factor in what happened during the postseason, especially teams that made longer runs in the postseason. So it's important to talk about this stuff. And like we always say, any conversations you're having about this stuff right now, it's just giving you that little edge. You're getting ahead of all your league mates. You're paying attention to this stuff right now so that when we do get to the heart of draft season, you're already ahead of everybody else. So it's smart to go through this stuff now. And I think we put together a pretty good list of things. Some of them I don't want to talk about, but everyone will know which players those are when we get there. But still, I think it's important to go over it.
Speaking of things you probably don't want to talk about, I should also note that sometimes people count what happens in one playoff game too much. Remember when Gabe Davis had, what, 4 touchdowns in a game and he was drafted in like the 4th round of fantasy leagues? And it was like, well, remember that playoff game? I was like, remember the rest of the game film of his entire career? Nice rotational player, not a 4th round pick in fantasy, folks. So sometimes we tend to overrate these island game performances. So some of the stuff that we have here, we might actually say, hey, it doesn't matter as much as we think. But I think this first story is one that we do need to talk about here. And that is the Patriots did not trust / have not yet trusted, because they've got one more game to go, their rookie running back, Travion Henderson, in the playoffs. And I mean, this was something that I pointed out to you last week, Boone, that the usage for these two backs is very, very stark, and it only grew in the gap here in the conference championship game. So far through three playoff games, Ramondre Stevenson, 72.4% of the snaps. Travion Henderson, just under 29%. Usage is 58 touches for Stevenson, 26 for Travion Henderson. Yards from scrimmage is 280 to Ramondre Stevenson, 64 for Travion Henderson. And man, he played what? He had 3 touches in the conference championship games, did Travion Henderson. So when we're doing rankings, projections, all that stuff, if you're cutting this thing off at week 17 in the regular season, I think you're missing some pretty important performances, provided, of course, we don't see next week Henderson go crazy in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's not ideal from the standpoint of me talking him up as a potential breakout candidate next year, but I don't think it's like a complete death sentence on that happening either. Maybe I was a little aggressive. Yeah. I ranked him as like a fringe kind of low-end RB1 in my early 2026 rankings, and that's, you know, based on the talent that he is, based on where they drafted him, that home run hitting ability. And we saw him do it this year at times. Now, some of those games, Stevenson wasn't around, but even if you look like late in the season, he was still performing pretty well when Stevenson did come back, had over 80 scrimmage yards or multiple touchdowns in 5 of their last 6 games together in the regular season. That counts week 18, but obviously not those playoff stats that you're bringing up. I think it's important to factor in who have they played, right? The Chargers, the Texans, and the Broncos. 3 of the toughest run defenses out there, all top 8 in terms of fewest rushing yards allowed. I know weather was a factor a little bit in some of those games too, right? So I think the Patriots have leaned on the guy that they trust more, the veteran presence, and it makes you wonder, would Henderson have even had those big like breakout performances this year if Stevenson had just stayed out there the whole season? Maybe not. Maybe, you know, if that injury didn't occur, none of that would have occurred. But still, we did see those flashes. We did see him in that lead back role. We did see the upside. So I think all of that's still positive. It's all still there. And yet I will also point out, I always bring up the Jahmyr Gibbs kind of rookie, you know, trajectory, and how in that first season he was splitting time, still putting up good per game numbers. And in his first playoff appearance, the numbers, you know, his production was there. He had a little bit of production versus Henderson, who's done barely anything. But still, two of those 3 playoff games that he had in his rookie season, David Montgomery was the one that was out snapping him in those games. David Montgomery, they were trusting him in important situations. So you still look back and you go, okay, like, it's understandable that we, you know, are scared of this. It's understandable that right now it looks like Stevenson is the clear lead back. And yet I do think there's a chance, based on what we saw at the end of the regular season, that we get to the Super Bowl, we see Henderson take on a bigger role, or at least get back to something close to 50-50, 60-40, We see him make some big plays in better weather. I think we could see that happen here. And as he continues in his career, they give him more. They begin trusting him more, a full offseason with the team. And we see him eventually take on the lead back role. But yeah, this is not good. I do have to bump him down in my next rankings update. I'll have to have him down more in the RB2 range. And he's a riskier RB2 because of this.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I never want to bury young players and think like, oh, what they showed us in their rookie year, even their second seasons, this is like all they can do. Of course, young players can get better. And I think that's the thing with Trayvon Henderson is we have to see that he's gotten better, you know, and get some signs in the offseason that he's gotten better. It's so funny that one of the things that made him such an appealing draft prospect, and if you listen to this show in the last draft season, and we had on tons of evaluators, basically everybody's conclusion about Trayvon Henderson was, oh, he's like one of the best pass blocking backs to ever come into the NFL out of college football. And like, this is just one number, but I've just been looking at it more and more lately. But, and obviously people have their feelings about PFF grades and I get it, but we're just trying to get into the ballpark of it. But among running backs in the regular season who had at least 40 pass blocking reps, he was the third worst pass graded pass blocker. Ramondre Stevenson was the third best. It's just, and that's typical, right? That's typical of rookie running backs. By the way, the worst one is Amarion Hampton. Kyle Manungai, another rookie that we really like. Ashton Gentry, like all of these guys are lower. It's getting used to the speed of the game. That's something that Henderson can get better at. And that's sort of the things that we need to see from him and hear about him in the offseason. Is like, oh, he really grew in this way. Because, yeah, I mean, we're always hoping, even if you are giving the Jahmyr Gibbs comp, I think, not to speak for you, Boone, but it's kind of like you're hoping he's a, you know, he's a Bud Light version of Jahmyr Gibbs. And that was certainly a guy that, you know, it took a minute for that to truly fully flip.
Yeah, for sure. And I think if we're looking at this just from like a fantasy standpoint, from a drafting standpoint, it could be a good thing, Harmon, because this could actually take a little wind out of his sails, maybe lower that ADP, because that was one of the problems this year, right? We were overpaying in drafts to kind of chase that potential upside. And it ended up being a mistake, right? He did come through for one portion of the season, but wasn't really that great starter until we got into the second half and down the stretch and until Stevenson missed some time. So maybe this brings down the ADP a little bit and we don't have to overpay. We can get him at a little bit better of a price here, and then hopefully we can see him earn that trust of the coaching staff and eventually step up and start to be that better fantasy asset moving forward.
Yeah, and last thing too, I think that one thing the playoffs has reminded us about this Patriots team, because they haven't exactly looked great in the playoffs. They're going to the Super Bowl. I'm not one of these like,
well, the schedule.
Like, they're going to the Super Bowl. This has been an awesome season for the Patriots. But it's just been a reminder that this whole team, especially on offense, can be better next season from what they were this year. Even though they ran super hot, their record's great. Drake May was awesome. I think that the offense could take another step next year. And obviously part of that would be Trayvon Henderson getting a little bit of boost there. So I agree with you. I think that it can be actually a good thing if it keeps the ADP depressed. Let's go to the next one here. And it's along a similar vein. The Broncos also don't seem to trust their rookie running back here, RJ Harvey. And what I mean by trust him, because obviously he has been the lead back from a touch perspective in the playoffs, just like he was at the end of the regular season. It really crystallized, I think, that conference championship game. Like, this was a snowy game, an ugly game with their backup quarterback. And they never just kind of saddled up RJ Harvey with a lot of work, you know, to grind out the game. And that kind of makes sense considering the player he's been in his rookie season. He was a top 20 back in fantasy in total points, I believe, by the end of the season, but he never cleared 80 yards as a rusher. He was under 4.0 yards per carry in all but two games, including the playoffs, since week 11 after J.K. Dobbins went on IR. And again, not to bring up pass blocking reps from Pro Football Focus, but in the postseason, 11 pass blocking snaps to Tyler Bidet, 7 for RJ Harvey, 4 for Adam Prentice, 2 for Jaleel McLaughlin. And the reason I think that's important to talk about, Boone, I think that what we've seen from Harvey is that he's obviously a dangerous pass catching weapon. It's a big reason why he was, you know, the total points were where they were from a fantasy standpoint, in addition to touchdowns. But I don't think he has shown so far the ability to be that early down sustaining base running rusher. But he has been a passing down weapon, but they don't play him on pure passing downs because they don't yet trust him in pass protection. So just a little bit of an odd role for RJ Harvey to analyze going forward, and the fact that they might make some moves at running back in the offseason. I think this is something to consider when we're talking about his draft outlook for next season.
Yeah, I mean, he did have 17 touches last week. The next closest back was McLaughlin. He had five, sure. Right? So he is getting like the clear work there. The production wasn't ideal in that game, but the Patriots defense is legit, right? Like, we've talked about Milton Williams
totally.
And how that run defense has been completely different when he's been healthy versus when he missed time, the weather in that game, all that sort of stuff. You know, the week before against the Bills, yes, it was a little closer. He had 11 touches, four for McLaughlin. But he outgained McLaughlin 66-21 in terms of scrimmage yards, right? So I think this is also that Sean Payton thing where Payton's always going to want to work in some more backs. I think you brought up the interesting part of this, and that's, does J.K. Dobbins end up back there next year? Do we see them go out and get someone else and continue to have this kind of committee? But I do think Harvey is the future as the lead back. It's just never going to be, I don't think, a lead back in the way that we're talking about, like the top fantasy guys, where he's going to have, you know, 25 touches a game and he's going to go out there and just dominate in terms of the backfield work. I don't think that's how they're going to operate. So, well, I said, I think I was wrong in my initial ranking of Travion Henderson, and I had him as that like fringe low end RB1 for fantasy. I had Harvey down at RB17 for this very reason, because I do kind of expect they're going to have somebody else involved, and there's upside there for sure. He could take a leap forward and could prove us wrong, but I do think they are going to continue to operate in some form of committee, and I think that's going to hold down his fantasy stats a little bit, but I don't know that I would put too much just on that Patriots game, because that was a very, very difficult matchup for him.
No, that's totally fair, and he's another guy that I guess you could go back and forth on how much more upside there is for him, because he's a late conversion to running back, but he's a little bit of an older player, you know, a later declare guy. Some people think that's not really my jam of analysis, but some people say that that is, you know, a lesser in terms of your upside long term. I don't know about that, but it is an argument that people will make. The interesting thing about him is that, you know, I mentioned Tyler Bidet played as the lead pass blocker in the playoffs. He's actually the best graded pass blocker at running back for 30 or more pass blocking reps in the regular season from Pro Football Focus by a lot. Again, these are just, we're getting in the ballpark with the grades. He's got an 87.4 grade. The next highest guy is like 72.5. So RJ Harvey just like, and by the way, Tyler Bidet is an exclusive rights free agent this offseason. That's going to come up later in the show with another player. Basically means you're not a free agent. The team can just retain you and like you got to deal with it. So I assume he'll be back next year. He'll probably be a pass blocker. I think the question is, is it J.K. Dobbins back, or is it another, you know, they draft another running back? Do they add somebody else? I think that would be the big question for RJ Harvey. But yeah, I'm not freaking out about Harvey. Just again, it's, you got to keep this in mind when we're talking about ADP next season.
Yeah. And I think I brought up this stat when we were talking about breakouts last week, but RB9 in fantasy points per game from week 11 on, that was after Dobbins went out. That's where Harvey ranked, right? Like, he has that ability. He does have that sort of ceiling. And even when Dobbins was still out there, he had two top 10 weekly finishes. He showed some explosiveness. He showed some big playability. Like, there is a lot to like there. I don't want to, you know, go too negative about him because he had tougher matchups in the playoffs and, you know, had this game, obviously, that we're talking about where, you know, not the biggest performances. He's not leading them to these victories necessarily. I still think we did see when Dobbins went down, that ceiling is there for him, but we have to watch and see what they do this offseason and whether they get someone else. And I do think there will be someone else, but I think moving into next season, it's going to be someone else in that number two role, not taking over the number one role and bumping him back down.
All right, third thing that matters from the playoffs for fantasy next season, and this is more concrete because it's an injury situation. George Kittle, and yet we don't know if it's concrete, as we'll talk about.
I was going to say, Kittle, I don't know if this is concrete at all.
He tore his Achilles deep into the season. He tore his Achilles in the playoff. Well, he missed the playoffs, obviously. But still, I'd say that matters going forward. So, tore his Achilles deep into the season. We didn't see him in the playoffs. What does this mean? You know, well, what does this mean here, Justin Boone? That's the question. He tears it in the wild card round. He doesn't play in the divisional, so it happens in the postseason. I'm clearly getting confused here because time has lost all meaning. But again, tears it in the wild card round, doesn't play in the divisional. But some Twitter doctors, and again, I wish I actually had more. I don't know if you have more concrete stuff here, but I'm just
going to
do
the. It, yeah.
Okay, you do. So go. I'll shut up and you talk.
Well, I'll say first, when I did my initial, like very early 2026 rankings, I put them out right after he got injured that weekend, right? So I had that in mind. I did not even rank Kittle in redraft because I thought Achilles tear point in the year. He's going to come back super late in the season. And listen, he still might, but we at least have some caveats to talk about here. If he comes back really late in the season, are you going to draft him that high? Are you going to really hold on to him that long? Now, it sounds like there is some potential positive news here. That sounds weird when you're talking about an Achilles tear, but apparently most Achilles tears impact the lower part of the Achilles, right? So apparently those are the bad ones. Those are the ones where they have to do a ton of work and it takes much longer for, I'm trying to like make it as simple as I can here. I'm not going to go into the, you know, in-depth injury analysis. I am not going to sit here and pretend to be a doctor by any means, Harmon. But the way I understand it, and it was actually Kittle that talked about this himself, that they are really excited about this because the injury, actually, it's a clean tear and it's higher up. And apparently when it's higher up, according to Kittle, that is better. They don't have to drill into the heel where they're going to have to repair it. That's actually, there's more blood flow in that region. So that makes recovery faster as well. Jeff Mueller, who is an injury analyst and a very good one over at Destination Devi, he seems to think now that Kittle has a shot to play in week one. I would be shocked if that's the case, but I am not here to question him or anyone that does great work when it comes to the injury stuff. But a normal Achilles would have put him out basically until sometime in November. Since this is the quote unquote better kind, he does have a shot to come back before November. He talked about that. He said he thinks he can come back before then. We know Kittle is like a wild man. He's going to do everything he possibly can. I think the team would be smart to probably slow that process down and to not rush back a guy who's going to be, what, 33, I think, during the season this year?
In October, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to rush back that guy from a really serious injury, even if it is the better version of it, right? So I would be surprised if he's out there week one, but this definitely makes it sound like he will be back early enough that he'll have a chance to make that fantasy impact to the point where I'm going to have to put him back in my rankings. And I think we might be talking about putting him in the rankings as like a fringe, like low end tight end one, high end tight end two. We kind of see a drop off. You get to like that Dalton Kincaid, Kyle Pitts kind of range. You start to kind of fall off into like the Dallas Goddards of the world and whatnot. I think he's now in that mix because we know how good George Kittle can be. And if he comes back and can get back, let's say he's close to full health by like mid-season even. Let's give him that huge grace period. Let's say it is like, you know, some point in October, late October, you have him for the back half of the year. I'm a little more interested and I potentially would be willing to draft him and throw him in an IR spot. But yeah, there's going to be a lot to figure out. We're going to have to monitor this throughout the offseason. But at least now we can say it seems like he is going to play next season and it seems like there's a chance he could be back in the first half of the year, which would change things in terms of the fantasy landscape.
Absolutely would change things for sure. And man, the quote that Christian McCaffrey gave after the season about how this last year was the hardest year of his life keeps ringing in my head when thinking about this, because he was mostly talking about the recovery from the injury and even bleeding into the year before coming back from or dealing with like a calf slash sort of Achilles tendonitis type situation. And you know, McCaffrey's younger than Kittle. It plays a more physically, I mean, tight end's a pretty grueling position in and of itself, but I mean, running back, you're taking different punishments. It's the whole deal. So it's just, you're right, like Kittle's gonna have to fight like hell, even if this is the good kind of Achilles tear, which I can't wait to spend all offseason be like, no, this is the good kind of Achilles tear. That's great. even if it's the good kind, he's going to have to fight like hell and rehab like crazy to get back. But the other thing, I think this will impact the Niners' plans in terms of what they bring into the building from a pass catching standpoint. They already have a pretty clear need at receiver. And if they don't I think they probably will not bank on Kittle being available early in the season. I think they kind of banked on Brandon Ayuk being available at some point this year, and they clearly got banged on that for very different reasons. They probably will go into the offseason thinking, hey, we need to add pass catchers no matter what. So that will be something to watch about this team as they, again, probably don't bank on Kittle being available early.
Yeah, and whether it's drafting somebody or signing someone, they probably do have to, regardless of this injury, have a plan in place for when Kittle does eventually move on, whenever that is. And I will say, when the injury happened and you have the owner sending a bottle of tequila down to the locker room, that seemed to me to be like, uh-oh, this might be like the career's over and we're like having a drink about that and pouring a little out for Kittle's career. But based on the way he's talking now, that doesn't seem to be the case. So that's really good news for him. It's good news from a fantasy standpoint because he just seems like football through and through. And I hope he plays as long as he possibly can. And that's just not from a selfish reason, because I will tell you, Harmon, I have him on so many dynasty teams that I don't want to give that up. I had to, you know, when he was hurt throughout this season, I had to go to other guys like Brenton Strange and others, and that was fine. But man, I would love Kittle to stay out there and keep playing at a pretty high level, which he still is.
All right, next story, and maybe this one will, I'm curious how you react to this one, because, you know, it might sting you last year, but maybe you feel good about it going forward. Kenneth Walker really shined in a more expanded role, and obviously the role expanded because Zach Charbonnet got hurt in the divisional round early in the game. So Walker was awesome against the Niners. Wasn't quite as crazy from an efficiency standpoint last week as a rusher, but the Seahawks, I mean, did a great job not leaving him in a lot of pass blocking situations. He was out in routes a lot. They used him and weaponized him more as a receiver. So again, we saw Kenneth Walker really take a step forward as a player here in the playoffs. And I do think part of that is because he was so fresh and wasn't worn down from the season. He looks like the most explosive player on the field right now. I just wonder, Boone, do we think that upcoming free agent Kenneth Walker has done so much in the playoffs that he has to be retained by the Seahawks, especially because Zach Charbonnet tore his ACL so late? Or has he potentially priced himself out of the Seahawks range and might now be like, you know what, I want to test the open market and see if there's some team that wants to pay me out there?
I think if they go on to win the Super Bowl, I think it would be pretty tough to not bring him back just based on the Charbonnet injury and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know that he's priced himself out, but there's going to be some people who are going after him. And whenever now you bring up Kenneth Walker, I don't even know what to do, right? Like, we've gone over my frustrations all season. I don't want to fall off my chair, but I wanted to do like the, you know, the fake elevator move where you start talking about him and I just like lower out of the screen so I don't even have to be here for the conversation. But he looks great. And it goes back. It's the hat tip to you, man. Like, you called this, you nailed this early in the year that they were just going to use Charbonnet. They were going to keep Kenneth Walker healthy. They were going to keep him rested. And that when the games mattered most down the stretch and into the playoffs, they were going to let him go. And yes, the Charbonnet injury kind of also helps that along, but it was happening before then. And he looks fantastic. And I can go back and say all the things that I said before this season, why I was excited about him then, you know, RB12 and fantasy points per game in 2024, despite the fact that he dealt with injuries in some of those games. But right now, we're seeing the results. We're seeing what this guy could be. We're seeing what I thought he was going to be during the season over his last five games. This is dating back to the regular season, of course. He's topped 110 scrimmage yards in four of those five touchdowns during that stretch. You just can't argue with that. Like, the Seahawks, they win.
Yeah.
They were smart. They made the right move. Who cares about fantasy managers? It's gotten them to the Super Bowl. This worked completely. We are the fools. I was wrong to buy in thinking that he was going to be this guy, this version of himself throughout the season. It's awesome to see. And I do think that it's enough to make me buy in again next year, and we'll see where he ends up, whether it's in Seattle or somewhere else. But how could you not want a running back that has this potential upside, that has a ceiling like this, the home run hitting ability, We've seen him now do it over multiple seasons from a fantasy perspective, even though it hasn't been for full seasons because of injuries and because of the way that they've used him. He has this upside, and it's awesome to see it on display, even though it's not really helping any of the fantasy managers who I told to draft him during the regular season.
Whatever, you helped them enough. They'll forgive you for this one. I think spinning it forward, and again, guessing as to whether he's going to be back on this team or not, the Seahawks right now have 66.9 million projected cap space, which is fourth most behind the Titans, the Raiders, and the Chargers. I mean, they've got money. Okay. They like, if they want to bring back Kenneth Walker, they can. Their upcoming free agents, it's Kobe Bryant, it's Rashid Shaheed, it's Josh Job, it's Tariq Woolen, it's Boye Mafe, like, and then Kenneth Walker. There's a chance they could slap, just like I said with the Jets and Breece Hall, because the running back projected franchise tag is probably like $14 million. They could just slap the franchise tag on Kenneth Walker. It wouldn't be that surprising, just because that's like so affordable, $14 million, when you got almost $70 million in cap space. I do think there's a chance that Walker just ends up back on this team no matter what. But if he gets free, there's going to be a lot of teams, I think, that will be interested in a young, fresh, explosive back.
Yeah, no doubt. And we'll see what happens in the Super Bowl. But we talked about what a difficult matchup that Patriots defense is for running backs. So even though it's been so good here, that final island game, the Super Bowl, that could be the one where he actually doesn't have that big of a performance if that Patriots run defense shows up in the way that they have other weeks. So that could be a kind of a disappointing finish perhaps to the season that maybe takes just a little of the shine off of him heading into free agency. But yeah, there's going to be some people out there bidding on his services, no doubt. And it's exciting to see, even though it leaves me feeling just a little bit bitter.
You need like a month or two away from Kenneth Walker discourse, like, which is unfortunate because they're, yes, one of the last teams playing in the NFL. But you clearly need a couple months away from Kenneth Walker discourse.
Yeah, let's watch him go out now. And after I said that, and be the Super Bowl MVP, that would be the topper. That would be the cherry, definitely, for sure.
All right. If that happens, I promise you, we will not discuss Kenneth Walker until like a free agent show. How about that? Okay. Last two stories here. We can be a little quicker with these because these are ones we've talked about plenty. But one, I do think the Jalen Coker breakout game has to be discussed here. And again, I'm actually not going to talk about this too much because I feel like I've talked about it to death. But he was just one of my first things that I said during that Panthers Rams game, when I still expected the Panthers to kind of get, you know, I thought they'd lose that game, and they were making a lot of mistakes. I thought, oh man, I thought it was gonna be close. And then the way they started the game, I was like, oh, now they might get blown out. I might look like an idiot for thinking that game was gonna be close. You know, Coker had a couple of cool catches. I remember saying, well, at least people are gonna learn today that how good Jalen Coker is. And then they really learned that. And now I'm thinking like, man, I wonder how much we are gonna learn that. You know, I'm not gonna say he's Gabe Davis, because I think Coker's a much, much better player than Gabe Davis ever was, but he's going to have that game that people are going to remember this last. And I do think that will certainly matter when we're talking about ranking and projecting him for fantasy next year.
I mean, if they stick with Bryce Young, though, how in are people going to be on this passing attack, right? Like,
it's true.
To invest in multiple guys in this passing attack, because we know people are going to go after McMillan. He's going to go high in fantasy drafts. I still think Coker will remain like that late round kind of player. We'll talk him up all summer. We'll probably be responsible for pushing his ADP up a round or two.
Too high.
But yeah, like to go out and have like career highs in the playoffs like this, 12 targets, 9 catches, 134 yards and a touchdown. But I mentioned it, I think, when we were talking about breakouts recently. From week 11 on, he was a top 36 fantasy receiver. So it's not like this is necessarily the Gabe Davis thing where all of a sudden it came out of nowhere and he did it. He was producing top 36 numbers for fantasy down the stretch. I don't think that's crazy to think he could continue to do that next season. So he'll be someone that I'm sure we're both going to target very heavily. And let's hope he can just keep building off this.
No doubt. And again, he's an exclusive rights free agent. So basically that means he's not a free agent. I was joking about this with Joe Person, who has covered the team forever. It's very clear that this Coker electric playoff game has revealed that a lot of people don't understand the exclusive rights free agent rules, which is one of the most, like, you're banged if you're an exclusive rights free agent. So he'll be back with the Panthers. I've seen some of the early mock drafts, like sending a receiver to the Panthers in the first round. I'm like, please no. We don't even know if we can get these two guys to football. Let's not. They can't go wide receiver in the first round 3 years in a row. I think that would be pretty crazy because Xavier Leggett is still a person who's on the team. All right, last one here. Colson Loveland, I think, in the playoffs, again, reaffirmed that he is the best pass catcher on the Chicago Bears roster. Here's how the targets per route and yards per route went for the Bears pass catchers in the playoffs. Number one was Colson Loveland, targeted on 33% of his routes in the playoffs. Luther Burden was 22%, DJ Moore 19%, Roma Dunze right around like 15-16%. Yards per route run, Colson Loveland, again, the clear leader, 2.56 yards per route, DJ Moore 1.4, Rome 1.2, Luther Burden just under 1.1. So I think when we are projecting next year, and there will be debates like who's going to be better next year, Odunze or Burden, I think the answer is Colson Loveland.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great call, and he's going to be one of the most obvious breakout candidates if we want to call him one. I mean, normally when a guy doesn't do it for, you know, more than half a season, I'll still look at him like a potential breakout, and I think it's a breakout because he is going to vault himself into like a whole new conversation. We always want to chase these tight ends who could potentially get like that elite volume. He showed it, right? Over his last four outings from the end of the regular season into the playoffs, at least 10 targets in all four of those games. And the stat lines were just massive. 6 for 94 and a touchdown, 10 for 91 and a touchdown, 8 for 137. And then the last game, just 4 for 56. But again, targeted at such a high level. I will tell you, Harmon, I have moved him up in my redraft rankings. I have him as the tight end 3 overall behind McBride and Bowers. I think I talked about potentially doing that last week. That's the way to go. I think he is that kind of talent that you want to chase. I talked him up all year long as a waiver wire pick, just hoping that he could unlock that. And again, another guy that kind of unlocked it fairly late. He had some big games along the way. But now going into next season, there are not going to be many tight ends that you want over him. And we'll just have to see where that ADP slides in. Hopefully not as tight end 3, but I imagine it's going to be very high. I think at worst, you're looking at him as a top 5 guy.
Yeah, I bet he ends up as tight end 3, if not tight end 2, depending on what happens with the Raiders coaching staff, quarterback. Obviously, they're going to probably take Fernando Mendoza number 1 overall. But yeah, I'll say this right now. Like, I would rather take Colson Loveland wherever he goes in drafts next year than wherever Trey McBride goes, especially if Trey McBride is going to be like a first round pick. I'll pass on McBride there and take Colson Loveland, who I think could straight up like outscore Trey McBride next season. Again, I don't know who's playing quarterback for the Cardinals. I don't know who's coaching the Cardinals. Neither do they, by the way, because they haven't hired a head coach yet. I know that this Bears team is one I want to be invested in. And just because I like Colson Loveland that much doesn't mean I don't still like both those wide receivers. I do think DJ Moore will not be on the Bears next year. And I want to be in on the Roma Dunze bounce back when he's healthy. I want to be in on the year 2 Luther Burden potential breakout. But I do think the guy who looks like right now, and this is always tricky with tight ends because I always say this, like most teams don't want to run their offense through a tight end. He's a little bit of a different beast, and he's way better than Sam Laporta. And I think Sam Laporta is a nice player, but Loveland was drafted freaking 10th overall for a reason. And we saw that a lot. So yeah, very much in on all these Bears, but yeah, give me Colson Loveland wherever he goes next year. I'd rather take him at whatever ADP that is, dangerous statement here in January, than wherever the ADP is for Trey McBride.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk a little bit more about some of these other Bears receivers as we get into the dynasty debates over the next two segments here. So I don't want to spoil any of that talk just yet.
It's like Jags receivers and Bears receivers. We're going to be talking about them all offseason. I don't need to blow it here in January. But we are going to get into our dynasty debates. We have a ton of those to get into. We're going to get into those in the next segment right after we take this quick break. All All right, we're back, and it's the segment that you guys know you love, and we have actually dedicated a lot more time to it on this week's show. A couple of yappers in Boom and I have gone a little long on these dynasty debates. We're going to be quicker so that we can get to more of them, because you guys have sent in a ton of questions, both to the email line, fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com, and on social media. So, Boone, let's get into some dynasty debates. All right, first one comes in from Cody. Hey, Matt, love the show. I never miss an episode of Yahoo Fantasy or RP. Cody, just real quick, that, like, come on. That's way, that, like I said at the top, that's way too much Harmon. I appreciate it, but that's got to be tough. Okay, my dynasty team has Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., Brandon Ayuk, and Chris Godwin. Oof. Somehow my top guys ended up being Wandale and Parker Washington. I know the trademark is basically non-existent for them right now, but should Ayuk or BTJ end up on another team next year, should I try to trade the hype for a mid-tier or sleeper wide receiver, or should I ride with the clearly talented players hoping for a better situation next year? Thanks for the analysis. Cody, I think the question here, Boone, is, I mean, Brian Thomas Jr., is he, God, I just said I didn't want to talk any more Jags, and here we are. Is he going to be a guy that's on the trade market? I'm not so sure. I think maybe Ayuk definitely will be on another team, but who the hell knows what's going on with Brandon Ayuk these days?
Yeah, I mean, Ayuk is the real yikes here, and I'll get to it in a second. Let's quickly get over the Jags thing because we don't want to talk about them too long here, but I think BTJ is still kind of a buy low, is he not? Like, we're talking about a guy who's the wide receiver 10 in fantasy points per game just a year ago as a rookie. I know this year he had a couple games. It didn't really look like he was a fit in that offense for whatever reason under Liam Cohen. I do think there's a very legitimate shot that he gets traded this offseason, but that's pure speculation. We don't know that for sure by any means. So I'm holding him, or I'm trying to buy him if I can get him at a discount, because we saw that ceiling as a rookie. He's only 23 years old. Like, I have him as wide receiver 26 in Dynasty. I don't know how low people might value him, if it's even lower than that or not. Maybe I'm the one that's a little bit low on him there. But I do think I would try to see, at least gauge what the value is. For Ayuk, man, like, I don't even know where to begin here. Like, what a weird stretch this has been, where he holds out, then he gets paid, doesn't look as good when he comes back. He returns to the lineup, he gets hurt again. You know, and then basically just seems like he gave up on the Niners completely. And I know a couple seasons ago he looked great, but Harmon, like, if you told me that this dude never plays another NFL game, I don't even know if I'd be that surprised. And is there a chance he goes to another team? Is there a chance that he goes to the Commanders and he gets to link up with, you know, his old buddy and Jaden Daniels, and he tries to revive his career that way? It's definitely possible. But right now, this is not somebody who I want on my fantasy teams. I would be giving him away for almost anything. I do not feel confident that he's going to have this career resurgence. Mm. Normally, when players go down this road, it's very rare. You've seen it happen a couple times I can think of, where guys look like their career's completely over, and then they turn around and recapture that glory that they had a few seasons ago. And I just, based on what we've heard and what we've even seen from Ayuk sharing things on social media, like, I just don't feel good about him being one of those outliers who does get back to putting up huge numbers for fantasy.
Now, Brandon Ayuk in 2023 was, he truly played and performed like an elite wide receiver, not from a fantasy standpoint, but from an NFL wide receiver standpoint. I have little faith that he'll ever get back to that again. I think if I had him on a roster, I would probably just hold him and see what happens, with the recognition that this guy could be like a Deontay Johnson type who just completely falls out of the league. I think that's very possible, but I do think that the upside of him getting back to being like a good fantasy wide receiver in the right spot, especially because that type of theoretical talent does not come available often, like in the free agent market, trade market, whatever. So I'd probably hold on to him and just see what happens. I wouldn't trade him low, because I do think you're trading him ultra low. Like, you're hoping to get back you couldn't get back like a second round rookie pick. It would be something very, very low.
Yeah, I think probably the best move is you hold him. You hope that at some point this offseason there is a headline that just makes it positive in any way. It makes it sound like he's going to get traded to a different team, get a new opportunity, just maybe his agent leaks something, whatever it is. And we don't want that. But whatever headline comes out like that, you got to be ready that as soon as that headline hits that day, you get those trade offers out into people's inboxes. You just send it to everybody in your league. You hope somebody bites and you get maybe a second round pick back. But there's also the possibility, if you continue to hold him, that it could go the other way, like we're saying, and that he could become almost worthless by the end of this offseason. I hope that's not the case. I really like the player, and you know, I don't want to see that happen. But I will say I don't have any shares of Brandon Ayuk anymore on my teams, and I'm pretty glad about that.
Yeah, it's definitely better for your mental health. Okay, next one comes in from Football Dynasty Stud, I believe, on social media. You acknowledged that the Petzing hire in Detroit wasn't really inspiring. Should Amon-Ra managers be exploring deals to move to similarly valued assets? That offense already lost a bunch with Ben Johnson, and I'm worried it gets worse with Petzing this year. I'll answer this quickly, Boone, before I get your thoughts here. We're going to, again, I keep saying this, Nate Tice and I are going to be doing a whole coaching show. There's been so much coaching moves. I'm actually, producer Colin, I've been meaning to mention this to you. I think we might need to do a two-parter on that coaching show, because there's no way we're going to be able to do like a one-hour show on the coaches. But anyways, we'll talk Petzing, offensive coordinator, Detroit Lions. I'm actually not as concerned about it as other fantasy heads seem to be. Again, we'll talk more about that with Nate. But regardless, I view a player like Amon-Ra as pretty much impervious to coaching moves, and I actually kind of think last year was good proof of concept of that.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly how I would approach it. I mean, at least 115 catches, at least 1,200 yards in three straight years, 10 touchdowns or more each of those seasons. Like, this guy is amazing. It's been over 1,400 yards two of the last 3 years, including this past one. And like you said, there's been different play callers in there. It wasn't with Ben Johnson the entire time. So yeah, I think he's going to be fine. I'm not really worried about him at all. If you do want to, you know, it's nothing wrong with putting a player out there and seeing what kind of offers you might get back. You don't have to accept one of them. You can just kind of gauge his value in your league. Just if you do that, no, you might be trading away a top five dynasty wide receiver, because that's how I have him ranked.
I love the St. Brown quote. Do you guys, do you think they just hire a random dude? Like, do you not have trust in Dan Campbell? Well, he didn't really nail it on the last hire, considering that he took play calling duties back in the middle of the year, but you know, it's fine. Okay, next one comes in from Chad. Huge fan of the show. Thanks for all you do. On the latest episode, you and Scott floated the possibility of Clint Kubiak going to the Raiders, and have on many occasions touted the benefits of getting the QB and coach situation aligned. Aside from the obvious beneficiaries of Brock Bowers and Ashton Jeanty, which current Raiders wide receiver stands to benefit the most in 2026? I should also note that Jeffrey sent in an email asking, Ashton Jeanty, is he still a first round pick in Dynasty? I took him 1.11 in a startup, and I have mixed feelings. Obviously, again, I'm guessing that Clint Kubiak ends up as the head coach of the Raiders. I do not know that for sure, but this would be a great ecosystem potentially to invest in if they do get one of those type of play callers. I like Jack Besh. Don't know that he'd be, you know, an elite fit in this system. We'll talk about that more if the hire actually happens. But the Jeanty first round pick startup, do you think he is still that level of a dynasty player right now, Boone?
I don't know if I ever thought he was a first round dynasty startup pick. Like, dynasty rookie pick, obviously. Okay. Last year he was the clear 101. And he had a great season, right? Over 1,300 yards and 10 touchdowns. I think based on the way he performed throughout the year, I think even I was surprised when I saw his year-end stats. And normally it's the other way around. For them to be higher than I expected was actually quite shocking. But if I look at it right now, if we're talking about Superflex, because obviously it's different if we're not talking about Superflex.
Sure.
In Superflex, I see him more as a second-round pick. There is a ton of quarterbacks. I might have 10 quarterbacks above him, something like that. I think that's really important in Superflex to come away from one of the first two rounds with a QB. And yeah, I have him as my RB4, so it's more towards the end of the second round in Superflex. If it's not Superflex, then we're talking about him potentially being at the 1-2 turn there. So maybe we could talk ourselves into that. But he's a really good player. I don't think he's quite on that level. I've said this before, of like a Bijan Robinson type. Yeah. I don't think he's that kind of player. I don't think he was that kind of prospect. But he showed this year that even in a bad environment, he can produce. And you would think that this environment is going to get better. I think we said some of those same things last year, that it could only go up, and it didn't necessarily. But if they hit the right coach, if they figure out the quarterback situation, which they're going to have a good shot to do, I think this offense is going to be better, and that should lead to some better production from Genty. So I don't think it's a bad pick, but I don't know that I would spend a first rounder on him unless we were talking about just a single QB format.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. And that's kind of how I'd value him as well. I do think he's, again, perfect bounce back candidate if they get the right coach in here. If it's Kubiak, I'm definitely excited about that. And we'll be certainly keen on tracking who they add at wide receiver, because there's no way they'd stick with the current room. They definitely are going to add some pieces there. But I still remain a pretty decent Jack Besh fan, even if my expectations are a little lower after his rookie season. So, okay, we are going to toss to another quick break here. When we come back, we're tackling more of your dynasty debates. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to run through your dynasty debates. Let's get to this one from Charles here with Charles McDonald, maybe. It's the Atlanta Falcons, so you never know. With Kevin Stefanski becoming the coach of the Atlanta Falcons, do you see a rise in their star players' value? I own Pitts, London, and Penix. My God, why so many Falcons? Should I be looking to move on from any of these players, and why? Boone, interesting. Again, we'll break down the Kevin Stefanski hire in full in a future episode. I don't have like a strong feeling on this, other than I'm worried Penix is not their future quarterback, and obviously Pitts might not even be on the team next year. So I don't have like a strong lean one way or another. Do you have a big bold take on any of these three potential Falcons players?
I don't know if any of them are particularly bold. I do think Stefanski's a pretty good coach, not to get too much into that, mm-hmm. because you guys are going to cover that in a future episode. But I think the fact that he's been in Cleveland with some of the talent that they've had there, you know, some of the items that they got on the grocery list there, you know, for him to do what he did with that offense certain years, I think that's pretty impressive. And I think we're going to see good things from him in Atlanta, especially, I mean, Bijan Robinson, if Tyler Allgeier leaves in free agency, I've said it before already, but I think this guy is in for just a monster season. We're going to see a massive year, one of those like league winning type years from him. So I see him as the 101 next year. I think London's a buy, and that's kind of regardless of Stefanski's arrival there, because London was good. Like when he was healthy this year, he was doing exactly what we thought he was going to do. I see him as a top 7 dynasty receiver. So I'd be trying to see if you can get an injury discount on him in a trade potentially, or even packaging multiple things to try to go and get him. He's still a pretty young receiver. You mentioned Pitts being a free agent. We don't know that he's going to be back there. I don't know that he is going to be back there. So we're going to have to monitor that one to see where he goes. And I pointed this out already, but I mean, a lot of his production came when London was out of the lineup, and it was great to see him actually doing something finally. But it was just very different when London was out there versus not out there. Pitts was the tight end 21 in the first 11 weeks when London played most of those games. And then when London got hurt, Pitts was the tight end 3 in fantasy points per game over the final 8 weeks. So again, nice to see him doing that, but don't know that he's somebody that I would want to go and get on my roster. I would actually be looking to try to sell him, especially we talking about like headlines coming out and trying to capitalize on that. It's going to be lots of headlines about Pitts and free agency and excitement about where he could go. Try to capitalize that on that and trade him. And then Penix, he hasn't really done that much, right? He's had opportunities here, got to start at the end of the rookie season, got to start this year before he got hurt. Just not really a great fantasy asset, I don't think. So if you have him and you think he is going to start when he comes back healthy, which I don't know that that's going to be in week one, he's going to be coming off an ACL tear. If you think he could be your QB2, fine, but I just don't see a lot of ceiling for him in fantasy. And I just don't think you're going to be able to get much for him in a trade. So you probably have to hold him as well.
Yeah, I'd like to see Pitts move on. It's nice to see him break out at the end of the year in a way, but I do think his skill set and London's skill set are too duplicative. I'm very curious to see how London gets deployed in this new offense, because I did like the way he was deployed in the old offense. But, you know, Pitts, they could franchise tag him for sure, but they also need to start thinking about a Drake London extension. Like, it's time to get that deal done. So lots to consider in Atlanta this offseason. Okay, this next one comes in from Encore. what to do with Marvin Harrison Jr. I also have Malik Nabers and Drake London, and we start two wide receivers. If you do trade him, what do you trade him for? There's a bunch of Ohio State fans in the league, if that helps. That's a nice variable. I never love the, like, who do I trade this guy for? Because I don't know. You're probably better at that than I am. But, you know, it depends on your league and all those sort of things. You want to try to get an even trade. Don't go into it like, I got to rip off this other person. You want to help the other person and have them help you. But with Marvin Harrison specifically, I still view him as a guy that I would want to buy or hold. I wouldn't want to sell him because I still think there's another level for him to get to. I think he's the right archetype of receiver to bet on in today's NFL. And I'd just be curious how the next offense views him from a deployment standpoint. I never really liked the way he was deployed in the old offense. So I still think he's a guy that I'd rather buy or hold, not trade.
I like to hear you say that. That's good. That's exciting for him because I do think there's some concerns about him after this season in terms of he was having an okay year, but then to see Michael Wilson kind of step into a similar spot and really blow up with it, that makes you worried, to me anyway, about what Harrison ceiling sure. potentially is. And is he more of maybe, you know, Devontae Smith rather than AJ Brown? Like, I think that's a possibility for sure.
Probably.
That maybe he's not that alpha wide receiver one. Maybe he does kind of profile better as a number two in an offense. I do want to address the OSU fans in your league. I think that is important, Harmon. I really do. And I agree with you that when you're trying to put a trade together, you don't want to just go, I want this player for that player. You want to look at other managers. What do they need? You want to try to see who's going to give you the most value back for that player. And if you know a detail like that, it definitely helps. I've been on the other side of that too, where you're trying to get a player off of somebody. I've tried to get Ohio State players off of Ian Harditz, for example, in some of the leagues I'm in with him, and he will not trade those guys almost ever. It is very difficult. Fun. And yet I know I can go the other way with it and maybe get a little more value back. So I do think those things factor in there, but yeah, I maybe am not quite as excited about Harrison. I would love to see him come through still, but I think I have more questions about him potentially being like that number two kind of guy. But again, put out a bunch of offers, figure out what people are willing to give up and pit them against each other. If they are OSU fans and you can potentially get more from them, do that for sure.
All right. Nick sends in, I'm in a super deep, super flex dynasty league and was lucky enough to win my league last year on the back of strong finishes from Trevor Lawrence, Colson Loveland, and Michael Wilson. So I've got late rookie picks in each round. I want to try and buy low on one of the year three wide receivers who disappointed last year. Is 1.12 and 2.12 too much for Ladd, Rome, Marvin Harrison, BTJ, and on the cheaper end, Pearsall? How do you rank them? I see Boone's rankings values, but I want to know what Matt Harmon has to say here. I also shot my shot buying high on Luther Burden and missed. Yeah, I'm curious, Boone, because I've thought and talked a lot about these year three wide receivers. Of this group here, Ladd, Rome, Harrison, Brian Thomas, and then Pearsall, which one of them, like, would you package this deal to trade for any of them, and kind of how do you see them bucket wise?
I mean, Nick seemed to ask for your opinion, so you better give him your opinion here. A couple things I want to say though. Missed on Luther Burden? What are we talking about? Missed on Luther Burden? Like, unless you got Luther Burden and then traded him away for cheaper, if you traded for Luther Burden, you have him on your roster. I have him ranked as a top 15 dynasty wideout.
I think he means he tried to buy him high and was not able to trade.
Gotcha.
For him.
Okay. So I read that wrong. I thought that was that he bought high on him and that he felt like he missed. All right. My bad there. Okay. So if we're looking at these guys, then I think packaging the 112 and the 212 for one of these receivers, I think it is an interesting move. I have them ranked Harrison Jr., Odunze, Ladd, BTJ, and then Pearsall. But I will say they're all pretty close. So just to give an example of how my trade value charts work here, all those wide receivers are in a range in terms of value from 52 to 41. A late first, looking at 2026, is worth 36 on average, and a late second, 15. So I think that is a pretty good trade. You might be giving up a little bit more in terms of value, but you're right in the same ballpark for any of those guys. I said Pearsall is the lowest there. I could definitely bump him up, though. We know I like him. We've talked about him before. I could certainly see him coming on and having a great career. So it's the lowest on the list, but it's not like I'm telling you to avoid him by any means. So that's how I have them ranked there, Harmon. But obviously, Nick wants to hear your take on these guys. So how are you valuing them?
The top two for me, it's Rome and Ladd. I have it in that order right now, although that was pre-Mike McDaniel hiring. I do really like the idea of McDaniel in that Chargers offense and specifically how he's going to weaponize Ladd McConkey, Keenan Allen likely not being back. I had it in the before the season, I had it Ladd or Dunze, but I think those guys are pretty close. Those would be the top two. I don't view any of these guys right now as established wide receiver ones in Dynasty necessarily. Like, none of them are in my top 10 rankings. They're kind of hanging around the 12 to 15th spots, but those are the two I'd be most interested in buying. And I'd happily send the 12th pick in the first and second rounds for either of those guys. I actually wonder if that deal would get accepted, but still, Dunze is the guy I feel really good about because it was good to start the year. Still like good separating all year long, but was obviously banged up, had issues at the catch point. I tend to think that just gets fixed in year three. That stuff's not sticky, and a catch rate is one of the least sticky stats for wide receivers that's out there. So are drops. That was obviously the problem for him this year, but otherwise, like, he was still good. He just obviously needs to catch the football more consistently, and Caleb needs to be more accurate, and I think both those things happen. I actually think, like, everybody's going to want to buy a Luther Burden, and I think the smart move is to buy a Luther Burden for sure, but I still think buying a Dunze is plenty fine as well. And yeah, I agree with you that Pearsall would be the last ranked guy there, but I don't know. I
know.
I could definitely see him. I could definitely see him on the rise if they don't add a ton to that wide receiver room. And he's another guy that I think people will be like straight up out on this offseason. I don't even know if you'd have to send a first round pick to get Ricky Pearsall.
Agreed. I am willing to buy on all these guys as long as people are looking at Marvin Harrison Jr. as more of the range that we've talked about him here. I think he's more of that, you know, wide receiver two for fantasy. I don't know that he's going to emerge as what people thought when they were drafting him in Dynasty initially as potentially that like alpha number one. The other thing I will add for a trade like this, when you're talking about sending firsts or seconds in a trade, right? So this one, I'm talking about sending a first and a second for a player. I would always try to get back a pick, a lower round pick, like a third or a fourth, like just get them to throw that in. That is not going to be like the killer for a deal. They're going to be excited about the big pieces in the deal. And if you can get back, like if you're giving up the 212, some managers at this point in the year aren't looking at where their picks are going to be yet. And depending on what site you're on, it might not show the picks, right? So you could potentially get back like a mid third and all they see is a first and a second coming their way in return for a player and let's say a third round pick. And the difference between a late second and a mid third, it's not that big. So those are like little ways that you can sort of extract some value out of trades. Always try to add that little tiny piece, get a late round pick back, and you're just giving yourself some value and another shot to get a player.
Let's hit two social media ones that we got this week before we have so many we could get to, but we're not going to get to them all today. Just because these are quick, like player based ones. Number one comes in from at DNA Fit One. Where are you guys at with Bucky Irving? Is he a sell low while you can or a bounce back guy? I like this question, Boone, because honestly, I had to think about it. Like, where are you at with Bucky Irving after a pretty disappointing second season from the former fifth round pick when he was the talk of fantasy world in year one?
I mean, wasn't a lot of the disappointment though, because the injury and like the weirdness around the injury and being unsure when he was going to come back and all that sort of stuff. Like when he was out there, he was still pretty good. I have him locked in as a fantasy RB1 next season for redraft. I have him in that same range as a top 10 dynasty back. I still really like him. 23 years old. I know he dealt with the injuries, but just 1 year removed from that 1,500 yard, 8 touchdown season. And, you know, from week 6 on as a rookie, he was RB11 in fantasy points per game. So he showed us that he can be that RB1 for fantasy. Even this year, though, he missed some games. People weren't as excited about the production that he had out there. He was RB18 in fantasy points per game. And I'm not even adjusting for any time missed, you know, leaving games early due to the injury or anything like that. So now with Rashad White leaving for free agency, it really seems like he's going to be gone. Sean Tucker taking over as the new number two there. I'm still really high on Bucky. I do think he's a top 10 dynasty back, and I'd be excited to get him.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't rank running backs for dynasty because I got enough with the receiver stuff going on. but Bucky Irving, yeah, I kind of might be a little bit more concerned than you, but I also am not like panic. I wouldn't sell him low, basically. That doesn't make any sense to me. I'd kind of want to see what happens here. But, you know, it does, like, things do change quick for these former day three backs when they have like down moments. The team's not that invested in them. On the other hand, they do have other team needs. Like, I don't think running back should be on the top of their priority list, like a problem to solve. Rashad White is a free agent. That's the thing for Bucky Irving. Beyond the injury this year, it was just disappointing when he came back that he lost goal line work to Sean Tucker and lost passing down reps to Rashad White, which is really just tough for fantasy. Like, you can't be a fantasy RB1 if you're losing both of those things. But it's a new offensive coordinator in the building, and maybe, again, no Rashad White this year if he moves on. Maybe there's just something to Bucky Irving that they see in the offseason that they trust him more in that regard. But the Bucks rushing game just wasn't that good last year, which was a problem for the team all season long, which I think is a big reason why they moved on from the offensive coordinator. So yeah, I wouldn't sell him low, but I think there is a potential trap door here, but I think you might be kind of just overstating it if you're selling him right now.
Well, I would also say, in addition to him being hurt for part of the year, we just saw so many injuries in that offense in general, right? Baker Mayfield was hurt.
Yeah,
the offensive line was kind of this revolving door of injuries throughout the season. So I think we can kind of chalk that up to a bit of a lost year as a whole for a lot of players in that offense.
Let's talk about one more player from that offense here for our final question. Edelmeyer Eric sent in Emeka Ebuka or Luther Burden in fantasy for the next 3 years. Love it. A simple player versus player question here. And I think this one is super close. I have a feeling you're going to say Luther Burden. Am I right about that?
I am going to say Luther Burden. We saw flashes from both of them this season. I think in my mind, Burden has the more direct path to targets based on what I think is going to happen this offseason in those receiving cores and those offenses, and just the trajectory of these two players. And we've talked about Emeka Ebuka and the last three quarters of the season, kind of how bad it got for him in terms of his production just going way, way down, him really only having one good game during that stretch, and him starting to actually lose not just targets, but lose playing time to Jalen McMillan when Jalen McMillan came back, almost rendering Ebuka like the fourth receiver in that offense. It was kind of shocking, and it just put him going in the wrong direction, where Burden, his best games came at the end of the year, right? He's still on the rise. And I think the way I look at that offense, I really think the Bears offense is going to be built around Loveland and Burden, with Odunze is kind of like the other piece there. But I think the two biggest parts of that passing attack are going to be Loveland and Burden, and I think it's going to happen as early as next year. So maybe I'm just all in on Burden here, but I have them close. It's wide receiver 15 and wide receiver 20 in my dynasty rankings. So it's not like I've given up on Ebuka. He's still young. We saw him flash in the first month of the season. That's not going away completely. He still has that potential, but we're going to need some things to change. We're going to need Mike Evans to get out of the way. We're going to need Chris Godwin to potentially not be the same version of Chris Godwin that now further removed from his injuries. If he gets back to being the real number one receiver there, that's a problem for Emeka Ebuka. And McMillan is still around, right? That's also going to be an interesting tidbit to see how this kind of, you know, sorts itself out in terms of the depth chart and the pecking order there. So I think I'm a little bit burned by Ebuka, but like we just talked about with the Bucks, some uncertainty with that offense, some changes in that offense versus the Bears. We know Ben Johnson's there. We're excited about what we saw this year, and I think Burden's going to be a big, big part of what they're doing moving forward.
Yeah, I'm not like jacked up about either of these guys, but I've got them 14 and 18, and I have Ebuka ahead. I don't feel great about that. I mean, they're the same tier. Like, it truly, I think it's pretty close to a toss up to me. The only thing I would say is, like, the next 3 years, like, Mike Evans might come back this year and then that's it. You know, Chris Godwin might be there this year and then that's it. I think McMillan's a nice player, but I just think, like, year two, Emeka Ebuka will be better than Jalen McMillan. I don't, maybe that's disrespectful, but I think McMillan's okay, and I think Ebuka will likely pass him up. I think there's an equal shot that Burden is the third best pass catcher in his offense that there is Ebuka, But I, at the same time, like, I like the Bears ecosystem going forward better than I like the Bucks ecosystem going forward. So I would probably give a slight edge to Ibuka because I thought he was a slightly better prospect and was more, it sounds crazy to say, more consistent. He wasn't a consistent player this year, but I think if he is the player he should be a more consistent option than what he showed at the end of last year. So, like I said, I'm kind of waffling between the two guys, but I'd give like the slightest of edges to Ibuka for the next 3 years. Now, this coming year, that does depend on, is Mike Evans back because he's a free agent, and is Chris Godwin back? Probably. But, you know, it's a whole new offensive system, one that I do think fits Ibuka well, and that will just be interesting to see with those two receivers if they're back next year.
Yeah, and it's important that we saw these guys have these big games, regardless of how it happened. You always point out whether it's early right. in the season, whether it's sprinkled in there. They showed they belong. They showed that they can be meaningful real life players, meaningful fantasy assets versus some other guys. Like when guys aren't producing at all, Jack Besh, for example, who, I mean, if you're picking somebody from that receiver core, I agree that he would be the guy. And yet normally players, receivers who have that yeah. kind of production, that little production in their first year, it doesn't really work out for
they
them
never
very
become
often.
Fit, yeah.
It's very yeah. rare for those guys to turn around and actually break out in the years to come. So, yeah, I at least feel good about these two because we saw them do it. We saw them do it. It was only for portions of the season and completely different portions of the season with these two guys specifically. But we saw them do it as rookies, and hopefully they can just build on it from there.
Love it. All right, that is going to do it for today's show. Boone, appreciate you, buddy. It's going to be a minute until you're back on the show here, so the people will have to deal with your absence here and just keep putting up with me.
Well, if your flight gets canceled and if you have to make like a cross-country trip, let me know. I will make my way down there and we will drive together across the country to get to the Super Bowl. And we'll record the whole thing.
I think I've done way more cross-country trips than anybody should do in an entire lifetime. Being from Virginia, moving to LA, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But, you know, hey, one more for the road. Why not? Honestly, there's probably going to be like 10 more in my lifetime, so I shouldn't say that. And most important news here, Justin Boone related, next time you see him on this show, it's going to be at the NFL Scouting Combine, because we are going to be doing that in February. Because you know what, folks? The pod never stops. Football never stops. And once we get past the Super Bowl, there's still going to be plenty of things to break down on this show. But for today, that is going to do it. Like I mentioned at the top, fingers crossed, weather cooperates. I will be in San Francisco for Super Bowl week. Nate Tice is going to join me on Monday. Again, fingers crossed, live at 2 p.m. Pacific to get you ready for Super Bowl. We're going to dive into some early draft stuff too with his latest mock draft. Until then, we are out.